We have been looking at different people in the Bible the last several weeks, their character, their personality, looking at real people, real life situations. You remember some weeks ago we started out with a guy named Philemon who ended up being a runaway slave and a thief, a useless person. And his name, of course, meant useful, but he was useless. And he finds Paul, he finds the gospel, and his life is changed. And he, useless, becomes useful, right? The story of Philemon, the slave. And then for the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about a man named Amos. Amos is called the burden bearer. Now, a burden or an oracle, as you notice from our reading today, Habakkuk says he had an oracle from God. And that same word for oracle in the Hebrew is the word burden. It is believed that when a prophet had a word for the people, it was an oracle, or in the Hebrew, it was called literally a burden. It was a burden to bring God's word. So Amos had a huge burden. He was the burden bearer. He had to bring this message to people that were living in the north. Remember, we have a divided kingdom in Israel, 10 tribes in the north, 2 in the south. And Amos lives in the south. He has to go north and tell the people of the north that they are sinning. They are not obeying God's word. And trouble is coming. It's the Assyrians who are going to come and wipe through the land, take them away, and they will cease to exist. This was in the 700 BCs. Even though it appears that things are going well and you're prospering and you're making money and your crops are doing well and you have some form of religion, you are not obeying God. And if you do not turn and change your ways, trouble is coming. And then we learned the first week about his message, and then we talked more last week about the man himself and his character. And we realized that he, in his own words, was a sheep raiser, a shepherd, and that he was not of the school of the sons of the prophets, that he did not have theological training. Because he was mocked, he was made fun of by the professional religious people in Israel. Go back home, you fortune teller. But we found out last week that God can take someone like Amos with a devoted heart, who's totally given to the Lord, and he entrusts this message of judgment and grace to someone like Amos. This week we have someone called Habakkuk. It's pronounced different ways, Habakkuk. And I was tempted today to really talk about another prophet, right? His name is Jonah. You've heard the story of Jonah, right? Well, on Friday morning at 8 o'clock, Jonah Lee Grissom was born. And so I'm really excited about that and really have had Jonah on my mind. And Jonah, of course, is special, like all of our grandchildren, but he is has a special place where he is the last one in our family line, the last Grissom. So he's got a lot on his shoulders. Well, Habakkuk, someone has said, life is good if you're sitting next to someone who can find Habakkuk in their Bible. Hard to pronounce, hard to find. He's one of the 12 minor prophets. Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah is the way our Old Testament unfolds. And he's one of the 12 minor prophets. His name means embrace. And little is known about him. He's believed to be a contemporary of Ezekiel, Jeremiah, maybe even Zephaniah, and Daniel. Lived the same time as these other prophets. Nothing is mentioned of him in their writings, but the apocryphal book Bel and the Dragon does talk about Habakkuk. And Amos, as we noticed, was in the 700 BCs, came from the south to the north, Now Israel in the north is gone, and so Habakkuk is some 100 years later, and they're living in the southern kingdom. And Judah has gone down the same path that their brothers in the north have. They have fallen into idolatry. They have fallen into sin, immorality, injustice, away from God's word, and violent. The rich persecuting the poor, the powerful persecuting the poor and the needy. And we have the same situation 100 years later in the south, in Judah. And it is Habakkuk who is given the burden of letting people know. But what makes his writing so interesting is that most prophets hear from God and they take that message and they tell the people. But in Habakkuk, just three chapters, it's all a dialogue. It's a dialogue between the prophet and God. It's a conversation between Habakkuk and God. And the first two chapters are their complaints. Their complaints to God. There are two complaints, and then there are two places where Habakkuk listens to God's reply. There's one time that he prays, another time where he gives two oracles or words from God, and then he has a vision of God. And it reads more so like a personal journal than it does a prophetic book. But later generations found this text very, very relevant. A commentary of the first two chapters was actually found among the Dead Sea Scrolls. The famous quote, "The just shall live by faith. The righteous shall live by faith," right? Martin Luther, that's what he really, we talk about the start of the Reformation and Martin Luther pouring over the word. And he says, the just shall live by faith. And he has that moment. That comes from Habakkuk, and it's quoted three times in the New Testament. So in the first two chapters, he is troubled. His faith is troubled. In chapter 3, however, we find that his faith is triumphant. So how does he get there? How does he get from a troubled faith to a triumphant faith? How does he do it? Well, I mentioned that several weeks ago we had a clergy conference, our first clergy conference with a new bishop. And our bishop was speaking about Psalm 100. We call it the Jubilate. We have it in our morning prayer. If you're familiar with morning prayer, it starts out with a confession, an absolution, and then before we go into anything else, into the Psalms, into the readings or anything, we say either a Vanity or a Jubilate. And they both talk about coming before the Lord with joy, right? Regardless, every morning, regardless of the day, regardless of what's going on, we're going to start out right now into His presence with joy. Be joyful in the Lord, Psalm 100 says. Be joyful in the Lord, all ye lands. Serve the Lord with gladness and come before His presence with a song. Now, what our bishop was, of course, he was speaking to a group of about 80 clergy, but what he was saying is serve the Lord with gladness, right? That's easier said than done sometimes, isn't it? Easier said than done. I mean, it's great to serve the Lord with gladness. It's great to come before His presence with joy, especially in the morning if you've had a great night's sleep and you wake up and you feel really refreshed and ready to go. But if you've tossed and turned all night, right? If maybe you've been sick or you've been in pain, maybe you've been anxious, maybe you have something on your mind, weighing on your heart, weighing on your mind, a problem, financial debt, a relationship problem, something. That's quite another thing to get up and start your day with joy and serve the Lord with gladness. The bishop referred to the ebb and flow of life. that is how we are formed in our spiritual life. It is an ebb and flow. It is ups and downs. And it's not good for too much of one. You don't want it to be all happy all the time. You don't want it to be just all good and all perfect all of the time. But you also don't want to be locked into a sadness all of the time. And life moves up and down, right? I had no idea, but I the week after that clergy conference, I had a perfect example of that in real life. You know, I mentioned last week, my best friend of 51 years died, grew up together, even ended up in the same neighborhood together now. And it was a shock, you know. It was a tremendous loss. And a week later, a birth in the family, a new life. To go from, you know, to go from looking in that casket at Al to holding that baby in my arms in a week. It's life, isn't it? It's life. Up and down. Peaks and valleys. We have unspeakable joy, and then we wake up sometimes and say, how am I ever going to make it through this day? Habakkuk had trouble. He was troubled in these beginning chapters. He starts out with a troubled faith. He was troubled by what he saw in the world. And people say it now. There is no God. There can't be a God. I could give you a list. I've been here 18 years, and I could give you a list of people that have left this church because something happened in their life and they're mad at God and they didn't come back. I could write a nice list for you. And you know people like that too. And there's people in the world that can't be a God. There's pain, there's suffering, there's famine. We had a huge hurricane. People died, people lost everything. How could there be a loving God? Habakkuk starts out this way. He starts out crying to God, questioning God. Where are you? Can't you hear me? Can't you see? Look what's going on. The wicked are so powerful. They seem to be in control. Look at the injustice, the immorality. Look what they do with idols. And look what's happening all around us. Oh God, where are you? This is such a mess. And he complained that God wasn't there, that God was just idly standing by. And it seems that way, if we're honest, doesn't it, sometimes? Habakkuk cries over and over. How could you do this? Where are you? Well, if God's silence is perplexing to Habakkuk, wait till you get his answer. Wait till you get what he says when he finally speaks in verse 5 of chapter 1. I am sending, here's how I'm going to fix the situation. I hear you, Habakkuk, and I see all the evil, I see all the problems, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm sending in the Babylonians. Ever hear of a guy named Nebuchadnezzar? Great guy. He's the one that had that last king of Israel in front of him, and he poked out his eyes in front of his family. Great guy, okay? Nebuchadnezzar throws people in a furnace, you know, in a lion's den. Oh, he's a sweetheart. I'm sending in Nebuchadnezzar. I'm sending in the Babylonians, and we have all those verses about their horses and how fierce these people are. I mean, God says to Habakkuk, you think this is bad? You ain't seen nothing yet. What's with that? And that's the first step, I think. I'm going to give you three things. There's plenty more here, plenty more sermons in Habakkuk, but just three quickly. His first step from trouble to triumph is that he had to realize that God's ways are not our ways. That God's ways at times are mysterious. They are misunderstood. They are hard to understand. And at times, you can't have all the answers. I mean, Habakkuk must have been thinking, you know, why would you do this, Lord? How does this fix anything? How is this a solution? To send in the Babylonians to wipe us out and carry us away? What are you thinking, God? We sang John Newton's famous hymn, Amazing Grace. At one point in his life, Newton prayed and prayed, I want to know you more. I want a deeper relationship with God. I want to go deeper, be more spiritual. And he prayed, and immediately after he prayed that prayer, he went into a deep, dark, black hole, a depression. Right? Well, that doesn't make sense. Why would God do that? Of course, he came out of it a different person. But Habakkuk had to realize, we have to realize that we just don't know sometimes. And if he does what I say, Lord, I wouldn't do it that way. Okay? I don't know what you're doing. I sure not the way that I would do it. I wouldn't take that person. Or I wouldn't have this happen. It's faith. That's what Habakkuk, that was the first step. The second step was he had to learn what the psalmist, also the writer of Psalm 100, had to learn. Be assured that the Lord, he is God. He hath made us and not we ourselves. He came to the realization of who God is. The Babylonians aren't in control of this thing, okay? Nebuchadnezzar, he might be tough, he might be fierce, but let me tell you, God's in control. God is in control of this whole thing, and even though I don't understand it, and it's probably not the way I'd fix things, there's no doubt, Habakkuk says, that God is in control. Who the true ruler of this earth is. And whatever is going on with these nations, and they come up and people rise up and fall, kings come and go, presidents come and go, and leaders and rulers, and all this stuff is happening all the time, the realization of a God who is sovereign, and none of it ever, ever gets out of control, and a God that is holy, and no one is going to get away with anything. Sin will be punished. No sin goes unpunished. That's what the cross is about, right? That's why there's Calvary. No sin can go unpunished. And yours and mine have been paid for. So he had to come to the realization of who God is. And the third is, the third step to triumph, from trouble to triumph, is not just who God is, but who we are to him. And again, I point you to the writer of Psalm 100. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. We are his. Paul said to Timothy in our reading today, I know whom I have believed. I am suffering, but I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that he is able to guard what I've entrusted to him until that day. Full assurance of who we are and how loved we are, and that he has his hand on us. And that is where Habakkuk ends in chapter 3. From trouble and questioning and in an unbelievable place of where is God and why would he do that, to the end of the book where he writes this amazing text that you're familiar with. Let me just read it to you. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's, and he makes me tread on the high places. Troubled faith to a triumphant faith.